What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
All right, welcome you to Porch Talk. This is your host, Alan, and today I have Ian Fisher with me. This Friday, February 7th, his new album, Go Gentle, will be coming out. And Ian, man, it's good to be spending a little time with you, man. I've been listening to your music for years, man.
Really?
Yeah, and I'm really excited about this album.
Thanks, man. Where are you from? Are you from Missouri, too?
Dude, I'm from Alabama originally, but I live in Mississippi.
Nice. Awesome. Man, I've never really spent much time down there. I always wanted to.
Yeah, like I've always felt like your music, it would really resonate, and I always thought you would do well in this parts.
I love the South. I'd love to come down sometime.
Yeah, man. So, man, just tell me a little bit about growing up in Missouri, man, and how you got into music.
Oof. I mean, like, I was born in Florida back in the 80s, and my parents moved up to Missouri, where they're from, when I was, like, four. And, yeah, to be honest, I hated it as a kid. I always longed to get out, because, like, with my parents, they had traveled, you know, and they had kind of shown me the world outside a little bit. And, yeah, that was always so interesting to me, like, the idea of escaping to some place where you're anonymous, and I don't know how big the town you live in is, but I don't know, growing up in St. Genevieve, Missouri, there's like 4,000 people, and you just can't escape your shadow.
Ian, so like, I grew up in a place, it was like population like right around 500.
Holy shit. Yeah, so
I know what you mean. Yeah, dude, it's funny, it's an old trope, it actually happened, but you know, when I'm describing the place I'm from, I tell them, let's just say that your car broke down outside of town. Word would make it back to town about your car breaking down before you would get back.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And everybody would know that for like three or four generations.
That's right. Yeah, it's written in stone somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so even though I really love that now and can appreciate that now, as a kid, I was really ready to escape. So, yeah, it gave me a lot of, energy to kind of throw myself far from there. And also it made me, like, stay in my basement a lot and just play guitar and write songs as a teenager.
So self-taught?
Yeah, I taught myself how to play.
Very
stubborn.
Very cool, man. What about those teenage years? I mean, do you remember who you were listening to and, like, how you came to find your sound?
Well, I mean, like, I listened to a lot of country music with my grandparents, so the first concert I went to was Garth Brooks, and that was what I was really into. But then when I was a teenager, I started to creep more into, like, punk music and, like, indie music. So, like, the first concert I played, it was mostly covers, some originals, but a lot of covers from, like, Weezer and Green Day and this type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then soon after that, I kind of migrated to more, like, classic rock and classic songwriters like Lynyrd Skynyrd and stuff like that, but then more like the Beatles and Simon and Garfunkel, and eventually kind of got into indie music like Wilco and Sufjan Stevens and stuff like that.
Whew, man, I have been on a Wilco kick lately, I'll tell you.
Oh, yeah, me too. They're great. They're actually from right around where I'm from.
So oh, really?
They're from Belleville. Well, at least Jeff Tweedy anyway.
Well, dude, while we're talking about Lynyrd Skynyrd, this is just something, you know, I've been fortunate enough to play all over Alabama, Mississippi, a little bit of Georgia and Florida, and a little bit in Tennessee, and one thing that I've always found is the old trope of someone in the crowd crying out Freebird. I mean, is that a pretty national or even international thing? Have you experienced that?
I've experienced it internationally, but it was an American doing it.
Ah.
Yeah, no, I remember in high school I was playing with this band of mine, and we actually did Freebird. We did the live version, like all, like 21 minutes of it.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this janitor at this venue. It was a pretty podunk town that we were playing in. And this janitor, he crawled up into the rafters, and like I saw him crawling over the audience. Like, and I thought, like, this guy was going to fall because he looked like he was on multiple things. And not just the rafters, you know.
Right.
And eventually he got over the stage. And while we were, like, in, like, the real, like, hot and heavy section of the solo of Freebird, he, like, unfurled this giant Confederate flag with, like, an eagle with, like, a machine gun in its talons behind us. And, yeah, that politically isn't necessarily my bag. And
right.
After that, the band didn't play anymore.
Yeah.
The last time I ever played Freebird.
I mean, as it should be, dude. It's like, you know, like, whenever I go to catch a friend of mine's show, and there'll be somebody, you know, jokingly, of course, Freebird. He's like, I got two Freebirds right here for you.
Yeah. There's always some comedian in the audience.
Oh, yeah, there he is, man. Well, dude, well, tell me a little bit about, like, coming out of the basement. I mean, you just shared a little bit about playing in a podunk town around Missouri with the band, but, like, tell me a little bit about finding your way and just hitting the road and where you would begin to find success. What part of the world?
Well, I mean, after I got out of my hometown, I studied politics up in St. Louis, Missouri, and the university that I went to, it had a partner school in Austria, in Europe. And so I went over there for my last year of university and stayed. I went there in like 2008 and just fell in love with the city of Vienna. I don't know if you ever, but it's really a beautiful, beautiful city. And it just had a lot of things that I wanted the U.S. to have, like socialized medicine and like a mass transit system that worked. And yeah, it's just really, really nice.
Yeah.
And so I finished my studies there. And I tried coming back to the U.S. for like half a year. I moved to New York City and it just like ate me alive. And I just decided to go back to Europe. And so at that time I moved to Berlin because I had already started to tour around Europe while I was studying in Vienna. And moved to Berlin. It was cheap then. Like you could rent like a whole apartment for like $300.
Oh, wow. And,
yeah. It's not like that anymore. That was like 2010, but yeah, I moved to Berlin, started making music a lot around Germany. That's still where my main audience is today, but yeah, did that for a while and then eventually moved back down to Vienna, spent the last year in Toronto. My girlfriend got a job there and we did that. Now kind of in between everything, in between Missouri and Toronto a bit.
Yeah,
back to Vienna too. So
yeah, I couldn't imagine how that feels, man. I couldn't imagine how that feels.
Just
kind of being in between like three countries like that.
Yeah, it's exhausting. I mean, like there's a lot of beautiful things to it. I mean, I'm really, really fortunate to have been lucky enough to see all these places and meet all these great people. But yeah, it definitely comes with a price. There's a lot of, like impermanence and you just never, it's really hard to plan anything. Like you don't know what continent you're going to live on in like half a year, you know?
Yeah.
So it's tough. Not only just like psychologically, but just bureaucratically, it's a pain. I have to pay taxes in like three different countries. It sucks.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine that, dude. I have a hard enough time keeping it straight here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, luckily I don't have to, like, I don't make enough money to really make it matter that much, but
yeah,
it's still, filing tax reports like that all over, it's really shitty.
I bet. Well, what about like just with some of the previous records you've done? Have you done everything indie or like while you were in Vienna or Berlin? Did you find a record label to help you along the way, or how did that work?
I've released with a few different indie labels, but I usually end up coming back to sell for places. It's just, I just find like in this day and age, unless you have a label or like a management company that's really behind you, like 110%, and like really invest like all their time and energy in you, it doesn't make sense. And like most indie labels that I've worked with, yeah, they just kind of, yeah, they took me on for an album to see like if it would work, and just hope that I would do all the work. And the main transaction between the label and I was like me buying my records back from them.
Right.
Paid to make. So I don't know. That's always just left a bad taste in my mouth. I'm still open to the idea of maybe it one day working, but I don't know. You don't really need it in this day and age.
No, you don't. Not with, I mean, just the way that people ingest music now. I mean, I'm still a huge, huge record head, and I still like getting CDs.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's nothing like spending the evening with a record. I mean, it's just as, you know, it's the way it was intended to be listened to, front to back, song by song. Yeah. But I mean, with technology and everything, I mean, Spotify and all your streamers, I mean, it's just the way of the world, and that's how people ingest it. And I totally get, like, I totally understand, like, you know, just in circle talks here with just local musicians in Alabama and Mississippi, and, you know, a lot of indie, it's a big indie, you know, it's indie everywhere, but, like, you know, their thing is, you know, I don't want to put the music on those streamers. And I was like, how are people going to find you? Yeah, it's
a catch 22.
Yeah, but it's against what I believe, and I don't think they're paying the artists fairly. And I was like, well,
absolutely not. You get like 0.0032 cents per play from Spotify.
Yeah, right.
It's not much better with any of the others. I mean, you get a little bit more from Tidal, but it's like close to nothing. It's just not as close to nothing as Spotify. So, yeah, it sucks. And I mean, like, I think every day about pulling all of my music from Spotify because, like, I'm getting ripped off and I'm supporting some guy that's just taking a bunch of money and investing it in some, like, military drone company.
That's like, right.
It doesn't make any sense at all.
Right. And I mean, and it's one thing, like, we have, and they did a wonderful post about it, probably, it was back in January. It's a place called the Blue Canoe. It's in Tupelo, Mississippi. It's probably one of the greatest venues in the whole state when it comes to music discovery. The owner, Adam Morgan, it just seems like he really has his finger on the pulse when it comes to just bands and songwriters that you really should know about.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's been sharing. He was like, you know, right before COVID, pandemic, whatever you want to call it, he was like, you know, we were able to do free shows almost every night of the week, and it was full every night. People were coming to eat, drink, listen to music. We were burning it at both ends, and it was great. And he was like, ever since everything tried to get back to normal, the thing that I'm finding is people already have found something else to do, and they don't go out for live music. And he was like, these musicians need to be heard, and also they really need to be supported, you know, with merchandise or buy their CD or the record. It's like, because I mean, like we just said, it's like with Spotify and the streamers, this isn't helping anybody.
No, hell no. I mean, it gets you publicity in a way. I mean, like anyone could listen to your music, which is nice, but it definitely, yeah, like it's a pay to play game.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody like Beyonce is gonna like have her music out in front of a lot more people just due to the fact that the algorithms are triggered that way. And also like the major labels are the ones that own these, like especially Spotify's of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So like, yeah, an indie artist like me, it's just everything gets shuffled to the back. And yeah, it sucks. You don't get paid. You spend all your money on a release. And yeah, unless you spend a lot more money on press, no one's going to hear it.
Yeah, and I mean, even then, it's almost you get what you pay for, and then, you know, and to go to the Grammys, or whether it's press, or whomever, like, is writing about you, is, I mean, just because it's Rolling Stone, or Pitchfork, or whomever else, and even if it's high praise, I mean, who's to say that's going to translate?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really crazy. You don't know what to do now.
Yeah, I'm telling you. And I mean, like, I've been really thankful to be doing this show and to give, you know, indie musicians a platform to kind of talk a little bit about their journey and, you know, just ways that, you know, people can support them. And, man, I'm really hoping that people will fall in love with music again and get back out and go to these live venues again.
I hope so. I really hope so. Because, I mean, I've seen it change not only in the U.S., but also in Europe. I mean, people haven't come back in the same amounts as before the pandemic.
Yeah, I have a friend in Berlin, and she tells me she was like, the only thing that really seemed to have come back are those it's not disco, but it's like what is it, that new like computer music, what's it called,
EDM?
Yeah, EDM, that's right, EDM. And he's like, she tells me, she's like, there'll be EDM in Berlin. It starts at 10 and it's going till the sun comes up, and it's always packed out. And I was like, yeah, you know, what about the other things going on? And she's like, they're all there.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. I mean, there have been a lot of economic and cultural changes. I mean, I think that a lot of people are, yeah, economically hurting right now, like afraid to spend money because everything's gotten 20 to 40% more expensive, except for, yeah, the wages,
right?
And I think that a lot of people got used to staying at home watching Netflix.
Yeah.
But I don't know, I know that with my audience anyway, like a lot of people are my age, like in their late 30s, and a lot of them had kids in the last couple of years, so that also kind of like screws me. I mean, it's good for them, but yeah, a lot of them don't go out now because they're staying at home, and we've kind of entered this new era of like kind of like familial, like nuclear family conservatism, where a lot of people just like buy shit, stay at home and watch TV. Mm-hmm. Like I don't see community as much. I've heard that also with like theater and yeah, other live performance. It's everywhere, not just music.
Absolutely.
Except, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. But
we're probably not doing this podcast or radio program to just complain about stuff, though.
Oh, no, I mean, absolutely not. But, you know, it's just, I find it interesting, especially you, as well-traveled as you are, to, you know, just kind of pick your brain on some of those things, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know what we could do. I mean, one thing that musicians definitely should do is unionize. We definitely need to unionize somehow, at least to stand up against things like Spotify. And really kind of like pool our interest and pool our efforts to actually get paid a fair amount for our plays, or just collectively take all of our music off of those streaming platforms.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the most direct thing that we could do. There's no way for us to control the audience, but we could at least control our actions.
That's right.
I don't know. That would be one thing. But I don't know how to get an audience out right now. Something needs to change, because it definitely feels like there's a generational divide. Like, I don't see many young people. Like,
no, they're not there.
And Generation Z or Alpha, I guess Alpha are too young, but Generation Z, like, I don't really see them going out to concerts in the same way. I mean, even younger millennials don't really do it that much.
Yeah, Ian, I stay here in a college town here in Starkville, and they have a, you know, a street right off university there. It's called the Cotton District. It's where they live, and it's where all the bars are. And, you know, years ago, you wouldn't be able to drive your car down that street on a Friday night.
Yeah.
Now it's a ghost town.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll tell you this, just like Alabama, Mississippi, and this is one thing that I've been pitching on the show for a while now, and we're beginning to see more of it coming, is man, I'm really pushing house shows. And so there's two great house venues in Columbus, Mississippi. It's probably,
you're gonna put me in touch with them.
I will.
Maybe I'll come down.
I'll do that. But one thing I've been encouraging these people to do is, if you can open your home up, even if it's just outside in the backyard, or, you know, you might not have a large living space to where you can, you know, sit 20-25 people, but it's like, if you have a backyard, I mean, we could set that up, and we could run it. And like, yeah, if we could build,
if you get 20 people and they pay $20 each, then
that's it.
That's not nothing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And
a lot more than you'd probably make in a bar.
And we entice them, you know, to get them to come out. It's like they also get a meal. I mean, it's like it's $25 for a ticket. You get a meal, you get a show. You know, afterwards, you know, the merchandise table is set up if you want to support the act. Talk to them a little about where they're headed next and try to figure it out. But really, I'm really interested in putting together a circuit of these shows. Yeah, that way, you know.
If you do, then I'm in.
Right on. Well, dude, like.
Man, I miss the South. I haven't been down there in such a long time. The furthest south I get on a regular basis is Nashville, and that's kind of like Midwestern South.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not the real thing.
Oh, no. You know, and we're just probably about 3-4 hours south of there.
So
it's not terrible. No, this is northeast Mississippi here.
Okay, yeah, because my hometown's just like 4.5 hours north of Nashville. So
okay, yeah.
Yeah, that's not that bad. Or northwest. But, yeah, that's not that far.
Well, dude, to get back on... Get back on you a little bit. Tell me a little bit about, I mean, you said that you were headed to the airport to pick up accompaniment. Tell me a little bit about this tour and Go Gentle.
Yeah, so we released the record Go Gentle on Friday, and the tour starts, well, tomorrow. I don't know when you're going to air this.
I'll probably air it right when we get finished.
Oh, okay, yeah, then the tour starts tomorrow. And I have my band from Europe over here. And we've been rehearsing the last few days, and we're going to have a support act from Australia. So it's going to be a pretty international group. So my pedal steel player is from South Africa, my bass player is from Austria, my drummer is from Germany, and the support act's from Australia. So we kind of got the UN going on.
Yeah, you really do.
And, yeah. And, yeah, I'm on the way to pick up the support act. Her name's Anna Smirk.
Oh, and, yeah.
Yeah. You know her.
No, but when Raby connected us, they put me on her as well, and I haven't been able to spend enough time with her music, but I've enjoyed what I've heard so far.
Yeah, she's great. No, so it's gonna be cool. It's a nice little bill.
Is this gonna be all on the West Coast?
No West Coast. She came from the West Coast, and now she's coming to the Midwest, and we're gonna play 3 gigs in Missouri, and then we go down to Nashville. And play there during the Super Bowl.
Oh, boy.
That's going to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Then we go up and play Louisville next week, and then Chicago. And then we head over to Canada, and we play in Toronto and Montreal. And then we'll go to this music conference called the Folk Alliance.
I have a dear friend, Steve Ellis, who will be there, and I'm going to make sure that he catches your set. That is Folk Alliance. Is that in Iowa?
What?
Is Folk Alliance, is that in Iowa this year? Where are they doing it this time?
They're doing it in Montreal.
Oh, Montreal.
Yeah, we. So, yeah, that should be fun.
But yeah, so Steve, he has this thing called the Barn Concert Series that he does in Columbus. And that's what he does. He'll go to the Folk Alliance each year, and that's where he scouts. And like,
there's a lot of those house concerts that do that.
Yeah, and I go to those shows, and that was the first thing. After I went to a couple of them, I was like, my goodness, Steve, where are you finding these people?
Your old or broken phone can let you down, but at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number? Oh.
Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.
Yeah, this is incredible.
That Folk Alliance. Yeah. Put us in touch. It should be fun. So we'll be up there in Montreal doing that. And then we head over to Europe. And then we'll do like a month-long tour in Germany and Austria and Switzerland.
So. Oh, man. I have always heard, like, I have a friend, he just got back from the Netherlands, and mm-hmm. It was his first time to go overseas to play, and I was like, man, I always hear that, you know, the politeness and just how different the crowd is in Europe opposed to, like, an American crowd.
Yeah, it's definitely different. I don't think one could generalize about the whole continent. Like, I feel like every country and almost every region really has different types of audiences. Like, playing a concert in, like, yeah, the south of Italy, the people are a lot more fiery and loud than playing in, like, Norway, where they're a little bit more stoic. But, yeah, it's different than playing in the U.S., for sure.
Yeah. It was pin drop when you setting the song up or telling a story, when the song was concluded and applause and, you know, just hanging on every word. And, yeah.
I mean, it can be like that for sure.
Not every time, huh?
It's not always. I wish.
Well, dude, I've really enjoyed what I've heard from Go Gentle so far with the single release. I really relate to it. Just the story behind it is I lost my father back. It's been a year now, last January, and man, I just with you sharing a little bit about your mother's story. I just really connected with the message in the song, man.
Was it a long process or was it short?
He had been going down. He was losing his mind and yes, and it was slow, and then it seemed it was all at once.
Yeah. No, I know that. Yeah, my mom had cancer for 26 years.
Oh my Lord, Ian.
Yeah. And it went away, and then it came back, and then in the last 4 years, it kind of, not the cancer so much, but just the physical toll that type of medicine takes on you, it really set in, and yeah, it was a slow burn, and then it went pretty quick.
Yeah, but, man.
Yeah, I feel for him. We all have to go through it.
Yeah, that's just it. You know, I've got a younger coworker. He just started working with us about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and he was sharing with me like he's been having a hard time getting along with his father. And I was like, you know, you're young, and you only get one. And I know it may be tough, and he's probably driving you batty, but I was like, you got to love on that man while you got him, because he ain't gonna be around forever.
No one is. No one and nothing. Yeah. I mean, one thing that I found really interesting in sharing these songs with people, especially live, is the stories that I hear from everybody and, like, how they relate to them. Because, something I've noticed is that this grief that a lot of these songs address, it's not just the loss of a person. Like, it's not just, like, concerning death. But it's also, a lot of people would come up to me and talk about, like, relationships that they've had where the person's still alive, you know, like, even like people have talked to me about like a person that they themselves used to be, like a place that they lived or something that they possessed, like parting. It's all, we're all dealing with like the impermanence of existence. Everything and everyone, they're gonna pass. And yeah, one of the reasons to perform these songs is like to try to remind myself of how precious things are, and to try to be a little bit more present, which is not necessarily my strong suit.
I'll tell you. But just to go back just for a second, man, I was like, just once again, it's just as far as connecting with that, and it was bringing up so many things. But you know, along with observing grief and walking through that, but I mean, I thought you also did a good job of the other side of the coin, which I would say hope and joy, and you know, there, although it's dark now, but morning is coming, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that, like, even though it was really hard and it still is, like, this whole process is also very humanizing, and it, yeah, puts you in touch with your community if you let it, and yeah, can also give you a new relationship with the person that you lost. Because, like, as you might have heard on the album, like, there's some songs that really deal with that, like, deal with this perception of mine, and I think some others have, where, like death isn't necessarily the end, and not necessarily in the religious sense, not to say that any of that's bad or that I disagree or agree. It's just like, because I think anyone could have their own opinion about it. But for me, I just feel like someone continues to exist after they die. Not necessarily in heaven or hell or anything like that, but inside of us. Because when I think of the fact that my mom isn't like alive in the flesh, I don't feel like she's ceased to exist. Like, I feel like she exists just as much, if not more, now. And, like, if I allow her to, she could exist through me, like, in my actions and, like, in these songs, in this case. And I think that that's really liberating and healthy, and I think that, yeah,
I feel
can be healthy anyway.
I feel that way about places as well. You know, when we were younger, a good friend of mine, he had lost his grandmother, and she had, you know, it was grandma's house to him, and he really didn't know his grandfather. He had passed when he was very young, but we were teenagers when his grandmother passed, and I was going over there to help him go through things and pack things, and it was just, there were several moments to where you could almost feel like somebody was just passing by, although there was nobody there. And I, you know, and we still talk about those. It's like, you know, I just feel like if I was to step foot in that house again, I would have some kind of a, you know, like a, an experience, so to speak.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy how that works. I mean, I don't necessarily believe in ghosts in the traditional sense, but I definitely feel a presence somehow. And one thing that I have found, especially in, like, coming back to Missouri, because, like, I don't live here all the time, you know? And, like, right now I'm on the farm rehearsing with my band and staying in my cabin where my mom has been, like, where she grew up and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, like, some of the first times that I was there alone, and like it felt somehow haunted in a way. And in other circumstances, I think that one would maybe be afraid, but I felt like if it is haunted, then the ghosts are ghost people that I'd really love to see. And so, like, bring it on. Like, bring on the ghost. Like I want them to feel welcome in me and where I'm at. Like, I want them to come along with me.
Sure.
I want them to be there, like, regardless of what it is. Like, and in this case, like, I want to take them on tour. I want to put them on stage with me.
Yeah. Ian, I wanted to pick your brain a little bit about songwriting. I've read you've probably penned and co-written or written right at or over 2,000 songs. How young would you say you were when you began to write? Was it back in basement?
Oh, it was way back in the day. I was like 13, but I wrote a lot of really bad songs though. So like, even though that number's high, that doesn't mean that like that's like 2,000 completely finished awesome songs.
Right.
It's like 1,900 mediocre songs and like maybe 100 that like are decent enough to occasionally share with people.
Right. Yeah. I understand that, man. I've got ideas and verses or maybe a chorus, and just like the process of a song, and like I'd like to hear what you think about this is when is a song finished? Or, you know, sometimes I'll have these two ideas. Like I wrote this idea, it was a verse or maybe a couple lines, maybe 6 months or a year ago, and I really didn't have anything else for it at the time. And then, you know, maybe today I sat down and I had this new idea, and I'm going back through my old notes, and I was like, oh, these two go really well together.
Oh yeah.
And kind of
blend
the idea, and it was like, wow, I didn't have to work as hard as I thought because I'd laid the groundwork.
Yeah, no, that's always the best feeling when it's just there. I mean, it can be rewarding to really hustle and work your ass off on a song, but sometimes if you force it too much, it just kind of, I don't know, coddles the song. Sometimes the song just has to speak for itself, I feel.
Mm-hmm. And now that you have this album is recorded, it's coming out Friday, and the tour begins. Will this be the first time that you're sharing these songs live? Or because a lot of times what I find is before the song is ready to be recorded, it needs to be heard live. And like, I'm kind of looking at the audience to see, I'm looking for a reaction. And if I get the right expression on their face that I was looking for.
Yeah. I mean, like with every song, it's different for me, but with these, I wrote all of them and I recorded them all, actually. Well, almost all of them before I ever performed them live. So, like, I did feel pretty self-conscious of a lot of the songs and wasn't sure what to do with them in the beginning because, like, it was all really close and really personal, and I didn't know if they were good or not. And so I showed them to a couple, like, songwriter friends of mine and just asked them for their honest opinion, and after a few of them said like, hey, the songs are worth releasing, then I felt like, okay, I guess I'll do it then. And that's when I started preparing the recording sessions for everything. But yeah, I recorded them long before I performed most of them. And yeah, I've been performing some of them off and on for the last year or so, just solo. But this tour is going to be the first time that I perform them with a band. So, yeah, it's very different performing them with a band.
Oh, like,
they have this spectrum of sound that I just can't fill with an acoustic guitar and voice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a brand new element, and it's always it takes a load off, don't it? You're not working as hard. I mean, you've got, especially if you've got great accompaniment.
Yeah. I mean, musically, not working as hard. I feel like logistically I have to work like four or five times harder.
Oh yeah. yeah.
I book everything and I organize rehearsals and all that stuff, and it's just so much more logistical stuff to deal with when you have a whole group of people. So that's exhausting. But musically I feel like I don't have to do all the heavy lifting.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I can kind of lay back in the pocket sometimes, which can be good. Sometimes the pressure of having to carry the whole show alone can also be good. It just depends.
Hey, while we're there, just in case anyone is out there listening, as far if they wanted to get in touch with you about requesting to see if you'd if they could book you, is there an email or what's the best way to do that?
No, the best way would just be to go to my website, which is just my name, songs. So like Ian Fisher, without a C, songs.com. And you could find my contact on there and just send me an email.
Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, Ian, I'm really thankful that you gave me a little time while you're
thanks,
driving in the car. I had three more questions I wanted to ask you, and we'll wrap this up, okay?
Yeah.
Man, question one, and this is just for my own curiosity because I'm getting ready to get back on an airplane and go see a little bit of the world. But, man, what is, and maybe it's more than one, but where do you think has been like the most memorable or most beautiful place you've seen on this earth?
So, nature or cultural?
Ooh, let's do both.
Oof. I mean, I think that nature-wise, probably the most beautiful place I've ever been is the Aran Islands in Ireland, right off the coast of Galway. That's amazing. That's really, really breathtakingly beautiful. So that's what I would say. That's the first place that I think of. Culturally, I think that the most fascinating place that I've been to is Sicily. I go to Sicily a lot, just because it's like, yeah, every Mediterranean culture went through there and colonized it at some point and kind of left traces of itself. And so the food's just really great. The architecture's crazy and the people are wild. And yeah, it's a really full frontal experience.
That, like, you know, that's
the largest active volcano in Europe is on the island.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you could go up on that, and the people are also very volcanic.
You know, it was a scene in a Ben Stiller film, The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. He was in Greenland.
Oh, yeah, he went to Iceland, right?
Yeah, Iceland, that's right, Iceland, it was Iceland.
Yeah.
And there's this killer scene where he's longboarding down the mountainside as the volcano is erupting, and I was like, what a shot. Even, you know, like, it could have been CGI, but it looked really good, and I was just thinking... and even like when you bring up like Sicily or that, you know, over in Ireland, and I'm just thinking about, you know, as you mentioned, the culture of the architecture or the food, and the things that I was like, man, I have got to get over there to Europe, because I've been fortunate enough to travel most of the Western Hemisphere, and I've been to quite a few states, but, you know, most of the things I've seen is relatively young when it comes to like the human experience. Like I would love to see like older things, you know?
Yeah, no, I totally get that. But you shouldn't downplay the U.S. too much. We got culture and history, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, especially, like, you know, where I sit here in Mississippi, if I was to get in my truckie and just drive an hour and a half, 2 hours southwest, you know, it would almost be like, it almost feels like your vision kind of goes to an Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, to where it's kind of like a nicotine yellow tint on the on your eyes. And and it's almost stepping into a place down there in the Delta where time forgot.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, man, I could step out on this crossroad and I might have me a meeting too, huh?
Yeah, man. This is a special place too.
Yeah,
it's different than a place that has, 3,000 years of continuous human history. I mean, like, North America has a lot of human history from Native American culture. It's just, unfortunately, a lot of that was decimated by Europeans coming over.
Yeah.
And also, like, they had a different way of recording their history, so we don't see it in the same way that you see it from Egyptian, Greek, Chinese. I think that that's also something to remember. I don't know if you have any Native American lineage in you, but I feel like that's something that I would really love to see American culture connect with even more, because that's such a special culture. And I think that, like, the spiritualism of Native American culture is something that's lacking in Europe. Because, like, a lot of their traditional, like, Celtic or Norse cultures, eventually those people just became the, main populace of the place, whereas here, the native population was just, erased almost. Especially having lived up in Canada for the last year, I feel like up there, there's more presence of indigenous culture, and I think that it's really beautiful. I think that maybe if North Americans focused on that a little bit more, that could bring a source of pride and maybe some healing.
You know, I even see it on their television shows, like whether it be Shorzy or Letterkenny, you know, they'll have the indigenous people represented in the show there, and you can kind of see how everything kind of mixes in a pot, you know?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, of course, it's not everywhere.
Right.
There, but, it's definitely more present than in most of the U.S. Of course, there are some pockets, like in Oklahoma or elsewhere, but, I feel like in general, Canada is... Native American population gets a little bit more representation. I think that has a lot to do with governmental policies, though. So.
Absolutely. Well, second question I got for you, Ian, and if you could share, if it comes to mind, I would like a misadventure of you being a troubadour. Like, what was a big misfire while you were out on the road? Or
oh, geez, I don't know. There's been a lot.
I've been reading this great book by Brett Newsky. It's called Piss in the Wind.
Yeah. And that's a good friend of mine. We've been co-writing songs together the last half year.
Brett rules, man.
Yeah, he's great.
And
he's coming down south soon.
Right? Oh, yes, he is. Yes, he is. That's right.
Yeah. I love that guy.
But
if you see him, tell him I say hi.
I will. But, you know, he was sharing this story about, like, being in Vietnam, and, like, he had, like, some kind of, a, like, a small knot, like, a or tumor, whatever you would like to call it. And he shares about, like, he cut it out of, you know, he cut it out of himself while he was in Vietnam. And it's like, and then later I hear him, like, in an interview, and the interviewer, I thought it was a great question, is like, when your mother reads this, what is she going to say? And he's like, probably she'll say the same thing I did when I told her about it. You know, like, what were you thinking? He's like, it had to go. I didn't want it no more.
Brett's a great storyteller. I'm still waiting for that book. He asked me to read it and review it. I'm still waiting for it to come in the mail. I can't wait.
It's a great read.
Yeah, but yeah, he's got a lot better stories than me. Most of mine are just like, yeah, late nights, dumb things. Yeah, but you could hear most of those stories in my songs.
Well, right on. Well, Ian, last question, I'll let you go. And brother, I wish you the very best on this tour and
thanks,
safety. And I hope, you know, even playing Nashville on Super Bowl night, I hope it's a great crowd, and I hope everything goes well for you. But just for listeners, and I'll put it in the show notes as well, and I'm going to guess IanFisherSongs.com, but if people want to just follow your journey and stay up with what you have going on, what's the best way to follow you?
Well, I mean, you could go to their website and sign up for the newsletter. That's definitely the best way, so we don't have to go through Mark Zuckerberg to have a relationship.
Absolutely.
If you want to do the Mark Zuckerberg way, then I also am on Instagram and Facebook and all that. And that's just, I think all of it's just under Ian Fisher Songs.
Yeah. Well, Ian, I appreciate your time so much, man, and just sharing a little bit about the thought process and even getting into a little Spotify talk with me, man.
Yeah, man.
Well,
well, thanks for taking the time, and hopefully we meet up someday down in either Mississippi or Alabama.
Hey, that'll be great, man, and I'm looking forward to spending more time with your latest album here, Go Gentle, man. Great work. I've really enjoyed spending time with it so far.
Thanks,
man. See you, bub.
Your old or broken phone can let you down, but at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on my plan and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number? Oh.
Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.